This Monday with some very sad, distressing and painful news. On the 17th of June, just last month, we took this call. It was Winston in Deep River. He called in simply to thank the doctors and nurses at Groote Schuur Hospital. He had spent more than 150 days in hospital, 120 of them in ICU. He was hooked up to a ventilator for most of that time. Here's what he said on the 17th of June when he called us.
I'm on supplemental oxygen. So, doing much better. And then when I came out in March.
Wow.
So, yes, obviously having to learn to walk again.
Gosh.
But an expert or testament to the expert treatment of Professor Ivan Hubert and a team, expert team of doctors and nurses. I wish I could thank them all. The best treatment in the world. Obviously, it's all I know, you know, being a local. But Groote Schuur Hospital, I'm alive today.
Wow.
You know, and so I'm grateful. Yes, I was on a ventilator, couldn't speak for 123 days. But Professor Hubert, sisters Collins and Phillips, Werner Collins, Fuweba Phillips, and more. I mean, the treatment and care which I received, and this goes, you know, if I had all the money in the world, which I don't, but I would go back to Groote Schuur. Not that I would wish it on anyone.
Oh. Winston, if anyone has not experienced loss during this time and having had family members on ventilators, and when you hear ventilators, you think, oh my gosh, this is a last attempt. You were on a ventilator for 120 days. I can't imagine how relieved your family must have been after all that time.
I can only thank God for a praying and believing wife, you know, because they called her to say it's game over. They will allow her to come and say goodbye. And when she got there, the doctor who called her said, you know, in between the time that we called you and time that, you know, that you got here, there's been a slight change. And she said, I'll take flight. And she never stopped praying for me.
What made Winston's story so much more sweeter for me is that he mentioned several nurses and he thanked them. Unbeknownst to Winston, he mentioned a nurse, Heidi McDonald, who I know, and we quickly reunited them live on air. And it was beautiful radio. It was so touching. It touched me deeply. And I had some very, very sad news yesterday that Winston Kojo passed away this week. And after 5 months in hospital, he went home. He was almost permanently on supplemented oxygen. And I heard yesterday, got the call that Winston had passed away, largely due to complications from long COVID. Gosh. And I managed to get the phone number of Winston's wife, Claire Kojo. And the grace she had to entertain my call, just a complete stranger, and I just wanted to thank her. And she said, as a family, they are very, very thankful for the time that they did have with Winston. Of course, the pain of death stings, but she said she was grateful that in the time that Winston was home, he managed to tie up loose ends. And he could be with his wife for that time. And she's really, really grateful for that. And continues to be grateful to the doctors and nurses at Groote Schuur. And she said that they were holding Winston's hand till the very, very end. So, Winston, thank you so much for blessing us here with your call on the 17th of June. Just giving us that little bit of hope, because there's very little of that to go around at the moment. And on Wednesday, I attend a funeral of another friend, Desmond Smith. He was 64 years old. He passed away last week. And these tragedies don't become easier. I have personally, with friends and family, I've been through a few this last 15 months. They don't become easier. Someone like Desmond's passing away last week, and I was with his partner at the hospital, hurts me a little bit more. One great thing about having a friend who is literally the age to be your father is that they can equally be a friend and they can be a father type figure. It hurts. It hurts a lot. So, then when I see people on Sea Point Prom this weekend marching without masks, calling for what they call so-called freedom, anti-vaxxers, it really baffles why people still don't get it. But here's the thing, here's how I feel. Me wanting to and being enthusiastic to take a vaccine to prevent serious illness, me taking the responsibility to limit my contact, to be cautious where I go and who I speak to and to sanitize, that doesn't necessarily make me a good person. Another person who's vaccine skeptic, despite the documented evidence that it reduces your risk of dying, it doesn't make them a bad person. Doesn't mean I'm going to invite you to a small, socially distant braai in my backyard when we're allowed to, you know, in a lull between waves. But the non-science you spout speaks to a fear that you may have, a fear of either not having control or a fear of losing control. Of course, we must remain safe, and we are only safe if we are all safe. But I've taken to stop arguing. Even the dozens of messages we receive here to us, I've long stopped arguing or engaging. But let me end with this, and I'm reminded of that call of hope of the 17th of June of Winston Kojo. I'm a person who appreciates light and shade. Out of the doom and the gloom, I look for the silver lining. I'm largely a positive person. And I know that you have to have a sunny day as much as you need a cloudy day. And what's largely positive is that from September, over 18s join the vaccination effort. Takalanis and Born Frees, you are within. From September, you will also qualify for your vaccination. And that is great news. My current silver lining is checking those daily vaccination numbers. 257,000, 492,000 vaccinations was just in one day. That was in Thursday. More than 5% of this country is already largely and fully vaccinated. 9 million people are registered on the EVDS system. And that's great news. And I love the selfies. I love the excitement and I love the relief. And moaning moaners will say, well, do you have to take a selfie when you go for your vaccination? Yes! The scientific evidence shows that the vaccine is less effective if you don't take a selfie. That's how the science works. It may not be true science, but that's my science because that's what I believe. How do you think the 5G gets activated if you don't go take a selfie? It gets activated through your phone. So be proud, be excited, be enthusiastic to take that selfie. And one thing I do take comfort is when I see just this last week, this 35 to 49 year old cohort and their selfies. and how collectively untanned our upper arms are. Together, a nation of taupe. Bland upper arms, all of us. We are united in our pale upper arms. But it is the open line. It is the morning review. 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp. 072-567-1567. 29 minutes to 12 o'clock. We are in that special final 30 minutes of the show. It's your time to reflect on some of the 2.5 hours and counting of conversation that we've had here on the morning review. The Olympic uniform seems to be on the top of many people's minds. The conversation around how the legitimate outrage of the murders in Phoenix following the looting and violence in that area, how that could be and is probably being used as political gains to incite further tensions in this country. And of course, issues around gun control and gun violence also top of people's minds. But you can call in 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. But let's go to Henny, who's calling from Elgin. Good morning, Henny. How are you doing?
Hi, morning, Lester. How are you?
I'm very good. What's on your mind?
But off topic, I'm driving here through Elgin this morning. I tried to phone you earlier. And this plantation in this nice settlement, or this nice area, in the plantation, they're busy putting up informal settlements. So we saw them taking off all the trees to harvest the trees. They had an informal settlement in this nice area. And I can't understand the poor guy whose property it is. He must, I don't know, I feel for this oak. And I mean, I don't know where all these people come from. I understand that housing is a problem. But I mean, you can't just put up a little house or something. I'm actually driving past it now. And it's terrible. It's terrible to see. It's happening.
Is that an area where they planted trees which they've harvested? I think, and I speak under correction, but I think that is government, that's state property, and they part of the state plantation there.
I'm actually just drove back now, and I see it's actually much bigger than I thought this morning. I thought it was a small little thing. Now I see it's going, it's everywhere between the trees here. There's an informal settlement.
But Danny, thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate your engagement. We'll maybe write that down and see if we can jot that down to talk about housing and informal settlements in that part of the world. He's calling from Elgin saying that he's seeing increasing number of informal settlements in that area. But the lines are open. 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp. 072-567-1567.
Hi, Lester. I'm just phoning with my thoughts on Team SA's outfits. So I think separately the different elements could work. I absolutely love Veldtskunde, but I think together it really looks like Team SA lost their luggage and they had to raid the duty free for whatever they could find and then put that together. And I just don't feel it's very representative of the majority of South Africans in this country. And I think the only thing missing at the moment from the pictures were like bottles of Amarula. I think that would have completed the outfit, just giving it, like I said, that duty-free look. So no, sadly not in favor of it. Thanks, Lisa from Weinberg.
I would agree. It is an external view on what is possibly the trope of when people think of South Africa, particularly visitors. But at the same time, the burnt pale earthy colors also represent some people in this country. I would argue it represents people who call parts of the Western Cape and Northern Cape home, and that also represents them. So do we want a South African culture that represents just one thing or one group, or do we take turns on who we represent and who we talk about? I've seen some arguments that it reminds him of Afrikaner nationalism. I would argue that Afrikaner nationalism wasn't khakis and Falskuna. Afrikaner nationalism was grey suits and boardrooms. And then maybe there's even a conflation between the uniforms and the demographic makeup of the team. It's a conversation that I'd like to have with you. 021-446-0567. Jeremy in Musenberg, I'll see you. We'll be back after this.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk. The open line.
Call 021-446-0567.
Jeremy has called in from Musenberg. Good morning, Jeremy. How are you doing?
Good morning, Lester. Very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's on your mind?
Just regarding the gun debate, I'm going to try and keep this short. So I think one of the key factors I think is missing from the whole conversation is personal responsibility if you are a gun owner. Because I think a lot of it is framed as, you know, the government mandating a certain, what they, I guess, you know, to give them sort of like credit for being acting in good faith, is they are trying to kind of prevent harm to their citizens. Okay, I mean, arguably, I don't think that is the case. But, and on the other side, you've got the gun lobby, which, you know, it's always about like my rights, you know, to defend my family, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what's missing from that debate is if you decide to purchase a firearm to protect yourself, you also have to be very clear what you're doing, because you're taking on quite a weight.
It's a responsibility.
Like a literal physical, yeah, you're taking a weight, a physical weight onto your person. If you're going to carry a firearm, like a pistol or concealed firearm for personal protection, you also have to frame, like, where are you carrying it everywhere with you? Are you taking it in your car to the mall? Are you trying to fly with it? It becomes a lot. I'm trying to say that. And I think also, obviously, there's the other factors, which is, you know, if you have a temper, you're in a road rage incident, it becomes something that might blow back in your face. So it's just that it's a sense of personal responsibility. Like, if I'm carrying a firearm as a citizen to protect myself and fellow citizens, then am I trained to do that, or am I just going to start pulling my firearm out in a parking lot to try and stop a cash in transit heist? Do you know what I mean? So I think that part of that conversation is missing, in the sense that, like, if I choose, and I agree that I should have a right to choose to defend myself, I need to be very well informed and very clearly informed about the consequences for my life. Like, am I going to the beach with a firearm in my bag? If I'm not, is it in the car? Is it at home? If it's at home, what's the point of having it? All of these things need to be worked out before I can walk into a gun shop and buy something which can kill someone else. And if I do kill someone else, how do I deal with the trauma of that? Because I may think, you know, like I'm playing a video game until I pull the trigger. And then there's a whole lot of consequences that come from that, which could upend my whole life. So I think that framing of it is absent from this debate.
Because it also is about what we perceive to be safe versus unsafe, or how we feel unsafe. I'm far more likely to be killed in or maimed or hurt in a township or on the Cape Flats than I am in my suburban home. But in my suburban home, I have the perception also of not feeling safe.
Yeah.
Is that also a part of the conversation where the perception of feeling safe or unsafe is also there in South Africa, and that we've probably issues of safety is valid for many South Africans, but I also know of friends, and I have friends who live in essential fortresses, but the statistics in their community where they live shows a very low level of crime, but it's their perception of safety that is also part of the conversation. Their perception of needing something for self-defense is also should be part of the conversation.
Right, no, I agree.
Jeremy in Musenberg, appreciate your comments. Thank you so much for calling in. Is it Karen or Karen in Genken? How are you doing?
Hello, Lisa. It's Karen.
Hi, but
it doesn't matter. You can call me Karen. you know, I'm just so excited about the Olympics, and I think the whole furore about the outfits is a little over the top because it's a fashion thing, and you know how bitchy fashionistas can be. But I really do believe that the suppliers should be making those available at a very good rate so that our children can be wearing their Olympic outfits because they're the true Olympians. To me, the patience they've had in this pandemic, I think South African children deserve their outfits and their veldschoenen and their little shirts and their little shorts and whatever else, because this is fantastic, getting the spirit of the Olympics going in a season like this, honestly.
Look, I also think that it's a Summer Olympics. I don't want to be walking around in a blazer, you know, in summer in Tokyo. And I think there's also a lightness, a maybe even a frivolity. It's the veldschoenen and funky South African flag socks, which I think for me is a nice touch. It's a light touch. It's frivolous and it's fun.
You know, Proteas are pink. What can I say?
Karen and Glenken, really appreciate the call. Your calls come in. 021-446-0567. It's 15 minutes to 12 o'clock. We are taking your calls on 021-446-0567. But let's go to a quick voice note there, Jonas.
Hi, Lester. Regarding the uniform that the athletes wore to the opening, it's not really important. I don't care what they wore. What I'm interested in is how well they do. I don't care if they wore strange safari suit-like things with funny little pork pie hats. They did look a bit ridiculous, but really, it's not even an issue. And I can't believe people are making such a big fuss about nothing. Cheers, Keith.
Thanks, Keith. That's also, I think we also know what we want out of the Olympics. It's an honor, of course, just to participate and giving people that scope and that platform. Giving people that opportunity to say, I can represent me, myself, my community, my people on an international stage. And that's great. But I mean, at the same time, we say we want medals and we want to see return on investment. There was a study that was done by the Guardian newspaper in 2016 on the UK, Team UK's effort in the 2016 Olympics. And they had calculated that each Olympic gold medal cost in training, development, making athletes professional so that they don't work 9 to 5, other jobs, day jobs, and then still have to come train at night, giving them stipends, the development, nutrition, and training, all that cost £5 million per gold medal. We're nowhere close to equaling that budget. We are nowhere close where we say our elite athletes are professionals, that this is their job. We have so many, even in our women's football team, it does pretty much better than Bafana Bafana. But they're not fully professional yet. They still work 9 to 5 day jobs. And we talk about many people who have to fundraise themselves simply just to get to the Olympics. We're a far way off. So we need to decide for ourselves, what do we want? Do we want merely just giving the people the opportunity to represent themselves and the communities on an international stage? Or do we want medals? And if we want medals, we need to pay for that, essentially. But Vernon in Weinberg, good morning.
Morning, Lester. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. You want to talk about new regulations?
Yes, yes. Lester, I find it quite strange and very draconian that when I read the gazetted alterations of going down to level 4 with adjustments last night, in the section where it says maximum of 50 indoors and 100 outdoors, it says the onus is upon you to count how many people are in there. And if you are aware that there are more than 50, you are then in a criminal offense situation where it carries up to a 6 months imprisonment and a fine. So basically what the government's doing is, like they did in the killing fields in the Bavarian draconian language, they now are telling us, the citizen, to split upon other citizens and say, hey, I'm at a place here, there's 52 people. Cops come and arrest them so I can go have dinner. The onus is upon you, not upon the manager, not upon the floor manager or the food and beverage manager or the hotel manager or the outdoors pastor or the person who died, parents. The onus is upon you. So the cops take you, the last one in the queue, you've got to stand outside a restaurant and say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 48, so we can go in. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's madness. It's madness. Ramaphosa has gone mad. He's taking the globalist view. The globalists are handling the puppet Ramaphosa.
Look, I know a few restaurant owners. I know a few people who own pubs. And I asked him, so what do you do when in a pub situation, and as the reactionary element there, the alcohol that makes people want to hug each other and talk in each other's faces, what do you then do? And these are my friends who would shrug the arms and say, what can I do? I've also missed out on income. And if I chase out customers, then I still lose business. And I feel that argument, but at the same time, I feel the argument as well that we need restrictions and we need people and like forcing people to police themselves is not the answer. If you want to have rules that need to be enforced, then let the law enforcement do their job.
Yes, but Lester, you see, the thing is, now you read deeper into it, okay? Ramaphosa is faced with factionism, okay? Mm. He's definitely got the Zulus, but they want him out. They want him out, the Zulus, the pro-Zuma people want him out, Ramaphosa out. So he's clever now. He uses the Gathering Act outside and inside and puts the onus upon you. So now, here's another scenario. You're taking part in a protest of 100 people. You know there's more than 50, so everyone can be arrested. So that's why they've got that in. But why put it in a restaurant and apply to restaurants and conventions? This is for purely to keep the rioters intact. The curfew is clearly to keep these indoors. They don't burn down any more shopping centres. But now they're so stupid on this committee. They've got, I don't know how much they've been paid. They didn't apply their mind. Am I going to count how many people in a restaurant before I go and eat in there? No. Now, the manager doesn't have to do it. Your pal who's got the pub, he doesn't have to do it. The onus is upon the guest.
I can promise you, my pals who had the pub has never done that. And it's self-policing won't happen in this situation. And whether it's our personal guards that drop or whether we are purely looking at it from an economic survival point of view, personal policing hasn't and will continue not to work. And if there are regulations or there are enforceable laws that need to be implemented, then the people whose job it is to do that must do their job, i.e. law enforcement. But thanks so much for that call, Vernon. Pete in Claremont. Good morning, Pete.
Morning, Lester. Morning. All good with you?
Good, thank you.
Yes, sir. Just two things regarding the illegal guns. You know, if someone gets caught with no gun license, okay, he's not owning that gun for self-protection. That gun is used for some other more serious things like robbery or killing people or whatever. Mm. And I think our laws should be adjusted so that those people, if they get caught with an illegal gun, okay, they should be, it's for attempted murder or attempted robbery, and they should get huge sentences. Mm. Yeah, and that applies also to these taxi drivers that were caught with guns the other day, and that the guns were confiscated and sent away for forensic purposes, testing. What did the taxi bosses do to those guys who are employed by them who were caught with the guns? They must probably stall in another taxi or in the same taxi with guns again. You know, those things we must address seriously. And just quickly, I'm so keen to go for my second vaccine. I looked at my WhatsApp and I went out WhatsApp SMS and I went to for my appointment, and when I got there I was 2 days early, so I had to return.
So you never got, did you get your second job?
No, I was so embarrassed that I'm two days early.
Look,
that I just turned around and walked away. In hindsight, there were only two people in the queue in front of me. I should have stayed. You know,
when I prepare to go for, I'm supposed to go for my second jab the last week of August. If I'm not getting a message, whether I get a message or not, I'm going to go walk in and say, time's up, 6 weeks. Yeah. Let's get my other one.
Yeah. Now, I was going to go with my missus today because she got a message to go at 12 o'clock. And then when I got my SMS, I was so happy. I didn't even consider look at the date. I thought, yeah, I'm in front of her, you know. Mm. And then I had to phone her and say, I call now, I'm 2 days later.
Mm. Pitt in Claremont, I hope you get yours sooner rather than later. Ooh, I'm not going to wait for 2 days. I will go walk in myself. I'll go before that message. If it's 6 weeks and it's due date 6 weeks since I got my last vaccination, I'm in that queue. Armin in Grassy Park, good morning. How are you doing here on the open line?
Good morning, Esther. Man, I'm okay, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. It's 7 minutes so I can enjoy a cup of coffee.
That's nice. Tell me, Lester, this is in connection with the uniform for the Olympics thingy. Mm. You know, now, I manufacture shoes, man. Mm. Chucky shoes, you don't know if I...
Chucky's shoes?
Chucky shoes, shoes manufacturer. Mm. Now, I manufacture shoes. Mm-hmm. And they said to me, now I must phone in, you know, mm-hmm. and tell them, because the last time I got something from, what is my friend? Tino. Mm-hmm. Tino Kamis. Yeah.
Chucky's Footwear. They also, you, I'm on your, is that you, Chucky's Footwear?
That's me, yes, yeah.
Looks very nice and all genuine leather all handcrafted leather. Footwear.
Absolutely, that's correct, yes.
23 years in the business. How's business been?
Ach, man, it's been okay, but now for the last, I would say for the last couple of months, it's been very, very tough, eh? Yeah. Mm. They were, yeah, it's really sorting out the boys from the girls. I tell you, it was.
Look, I'm very much into bespoke clothing if I can afford it. I'm a larger guy, so the shirts in the stores, I have to go look quite hard and deep to find my size. But I found a place that would make very, very nice and very stylish dress shirts, probably at the same price of a retailer would, and I feel far more comfortable in that. The same way, I like that a shoe is made for my foot, and it doesn't need to be an expensive shoe. Mm-hmm. And are you finding that many people are enjoying, you know, and preferring having clothes made just for them?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. You're hitting the nail on the on the edges. Yeah, no, it's very much so, you know, people, you know, those that have a little bit of money and so on, you know, they like to go the extra route on that side. Mm. But now I just wanted to, you know, get in there and tell them I'm still alive.
Definitely. I'm actually going to give people a little bit of a plug to your site, and as a small business owner, you need all the support that you can get. Search Chucky's Footwear, genuine leather, handcrafted footwear. Some details on Google. If you search Chucky's Footwear, it's the first link that pops up. Armin in Grassy Park, thank you so much for calling us.